the first thing right out of the gate is your demo needs to be fast and explosive, so it just awes them right out of the gate, right? So it's like, I might suck at words and teaching, but look how awesome I am, so, you know, respect me. And, you know, I relied on that. I can't stop.
Welcome into the latest edition of Mentality Monsters, where Fetcha and I are joined by Aaron Jannetty. Aaron is a husband, father, teacher, business owner, and lifelong student. He is the co-owner of Endeavor Defense and Fitness, author of How to Survive an Active Killer, and creator of the Active Shooter Response and Knife Control Concepts programs. He has been training and teaching various forms of martial arts and defensive tactics for 14 years. He has ranked and trained in Krav Maga, BJJ, wrestling, boxing, kickboxing, firearms, and more. Over his career, he has had the pleasure of teaching in more than 30 states and 3 countries. To this day, he continues to train and evolve as a leader, a teacher, and a practitioner. And I know you're from the state of Ohio, which is, according to meme culture, basically like a death sentence.
I don't know about that. I mean, I love Ohio. Ohio's got its, I tell people all the time, the beautiful part about Ohio, we get four seasons, and they're pretty decent representations of like whatever the seasons are. And then if you want a better version of that season, you can go travel and go find it. So you want better snow, we got a little bit of snow, and then go find better snow. You know, we got sunshine. You want more sun, we got a good culture, we got good beer, we got good food. I mean, it's a good place to be.
Are you in Cleveland?
Well, I'm in Columbus, so I'm literally dead.
Okay, so you're nearby.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we started recording, I asked you if you're a Browns fan.
Yeah.
You said you're not a Browns fan.
Yeah, I'm not. So here's the thing. I actually grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, which is right on the Pennsylvania border. And so most of my family was Steelers fans. And for no other reason than to just be a kind of a asshole younger.
Yeah, contrarian.
Yeah, I just decided that I hated the Steelers for a very long time for no other reason than everybody loved them. So soft talk acknowledged, I kind of rooted for the Browns for a while. But to be completely honest, very awkwardly, my best friend when I was growing up was a San Diego Chargers fan. So I spent the majority of the years where I really focused on the NFL and really enjoyed like pro football, I spent the majority of that rooting for the Chargers, man, like through the Junior Seau era and then in the LaDainian Tomlinson and like that whole, you know, big stretch.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm a former Chargers fan that was born and raised in Ohio.
being a Chargers fan now is cool because like you can legitimately meet every Chargers fan because there are only like 20 of them. The reason I asked you if you're a Browns fan is because I am a Browns fan and okay. I am like a diehard Browns fan.
Nice.
And
that's true.
So I became a Browns fan in eighth grade when I first met Kyle because, from fifth to eighth grade, like I joined Kyle's friends group and I was really shy at the time. And I was the only person that did not watch football.
Okay.
And all these kids talked about was football all the time. And so in my mind, I'm like, fuck man, I got to start learning about football. Because if I don't, they're going to kick me out of the group. And I like just found this group. And I, as a joke, chose the Browns because at the time they were the worst team in the league. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm a Browns fan, whatever. But everyone in that friend group was now like, okay, if you're a Browns fan, you need to talk about the Browns whenever we talk about football. So then I started doing research to figure out like what I was going to talk about. And that all spiraled into this like 15-year commitment where for some stupid reason, I haven't let them go.
Yeah,
but it gets even better. So I graduate college and I'm like, at this point, I'm like 12 years deep into watching the Browns lose 12 games a year. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, I have a job. I have money. I don't have to watch the Browns on like some shitty, you know, 3 by 3 inch by 3 inch, like free streaming service thing that I'm hacking off the internet somehow, I can go to a game. So I have a buddy who lives in Cleveland that I went to college with. And I was like, I'm going to drive out to Cleveland. So I've driven through Youngstown, because you have to drive through Youngstown to get to Cleveland from PA, where I was living at the time. And I went to a game and it was awesome. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this every year.
Yeah.
And I go back to Cleveland every year to go to a Browns game.
Hey man, the Browns, if there's one thing about the Browns, man, like the fans are committed. Like Browns
dude,
fans,
they know how to
throw a party and celebrate a team. I mean, the parties can get a little violent and aggressive.
the tailgates are nuts for sure.
And everything, but yeah, man, the fans are committed. You know, a lot of my very good friends are diehard Browns fans. It's fun to watch their roller coaster ride.
despair towards the end of every season. So the best part about this story is, and this is the last element of this, but over the years, I was like, after 5 years of doing this, going alone, I was like, you know what? I don't want to go alone anymore. So now I'm going to try to get friends to come. So this past year, like right before COVID, Browns played the Bills. I had convinced like 8 or 9 of my friends who had, none of them are Browns fans, by the way. Like they all were just like, okay, I guess we'll all go to Cleveland on a vacation. Like my younger brother, my best friend, his now fiance, like another friend from college, like people flew in from Boston, New Jersey, like all over to go to Cleveland on like a weekend trip to watch a Browns game that no one but me cared about. And I was like, this is probably my greatest accomplishment, because I was able to convince a group of people to spend money in a weekend in Cleveland where like the perception is there's like nothing to do in Cleveland.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And they did it. And we had a freaking blast. Like Cleveland and Ohio in general are very honky tonk. Like they're just an awesome, awesome time in that honky tonk way. You know,
I don't think anybody, you might be the first person I've ever met that described Cleveland as honky tonk, but dude, I appreciate it.
Once you hear it, you can't unsee it. It is honky tonk. It's great.
I'm allowed to bring up that Ohio is a target of meme culture, because the name Kyle is also a target of meme culture, and that's supposed to be the guy that drinks Monster Energies and punches through the drywall when he doesn't get his way.
And hilarious, that's who Kyle was. That's one point in his life.
And I'll tell you what, too. I was a cyclist at one point, which apparently the internet just really hates cyclists as well. So if I want to make fun of Ohio, I can make fun of Ohio. I am squarely at the intersection of the internet's hatred on several other fronts.
I make fun of Ohio, man. It's anytime if you can't laugh at yourself, man, you got problems, dude. Like I joke around. My wife was born in Southern California, and then lived in Hawaii for like 14 or 15 years, and then she moved to Ohio. And that's always the joke. I was like, I don't know what the hell she's thinking.
My God!
Now, granted, she followed her family back, and her parents moved out this way, and it was a whole thing. But like, that's always the joke. It's like you were born in Southern California, moved to Hawaii for 14 years, and then found yourself in the middle of Columbus, Ohio. Like, thank God for me, but it still doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like you chose to be pale a lot of the year instead of being tan.
Well, she's got a lot of Irish blood in her anyway, so she's not the darkest skin in the world. But as far as football, when I moved to Ohio State in 2004, I fell in love with college football, and then I started hating professional football. So if I'm being fully honest, it's been a long time since I've watched an NFL game. Honestly, last time I watched an NFL game was I saw the Ravens and the Patriots in New England at Foxborough, which was a blast. And that was more like I was out there visiting my, at the time, well, soon to be father-in-law. That was just a really fun experience, and drinking beer and having fun and watching two football team fans fight each other.
With no investment, you're just there.
I was just sitting back watching. It was a good time. But that, honestly, I think that's the last. I'm pretty sure that's the last football game I ever watched.
I went to a Giants Falcons game. One of the friends that I went with, he's a Cowboys fan, and he went with a Cowboys jersey on. Like, and the people who were like giving him the concessions, they were like, "Dude, why?" They were just disappointed. Like, we're not even playing them. Just like, why are you doing that?
Now, is that worse than when people wear the T-shirt of the band they're going to see at a concert? Is that the same as that, like wearing the right jersey to an NFL game? Because that was always the joke, was like, you go see one of your favorite, like, quote unquote underground bands, and it's like, bro, you can't wear the shirt. Like, that's don't be that guy.
I think that's disrespectful to the band, but the jersey is disrespectful to the fans that you're sitting.
That's valid. Yeah. I accept.
And it was funny too. Like the fans were like, dude, what are you doing? Like, they weren't like mad about it. They were just like so confused. Like, why would you choose this?
It's like, do you know where you are, right?
Sporting events in general are a blast. We have a minor league baseball team here in Columbus, the Clippers. And honestly, like going to like Dime a Dog Night at down to see the Clippers play is like it's just a blast. Like sporting events in general are a ton of fun. So, you know, I don't watch a lot of sports on TV anymore. And if somebody was like, "Hey, you want to go to an event?" I'd be like, "Hell yeah, man! We've got pretty good soccer here.
Yeah, we
got
hockey. Columbus Crew, right?"
Yeah, we've got Columbus Crew. You know, we got hockey. We've got, you know, minor league baseball. And then obviously we've got Ohio State, which is always a lot of fun. So
I'm used to live in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is where the Phillies farm team is for minor league baseball. And it's where the Flyers farm team is for hockey. Nice. So, like, you could go to the baseball game for, like, $10, get field seats. So you bring a blanket and you sit on the grass, mm-hmm. and you pay like $15 for 2 34-ounce beers.
Yeah.
And a couple extra bucks for a hot dog. And you have this great outdoor picnic, maybe catch a home run ball. And then you could go to a hockey game and pay like $10 to go see people fight for 3 hours, because the minor league hockey games are just like, they just turn into brawls. They're awesome. So I totally agree with you. The minor league sports too are great because you don't have to, like, you don't have to pay as much because not as many people go. But if you just want to get out of the house and like see some sports and kind of have fun with your friends and get a little drunk, like, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, you get 90% of the fun and excitement, like the enjoyment of a sporting event, with pretty much none of the drama, because nobody really cares about the minor league teams. You know what I mean? So there's like, the fans don't need to fight each other. Like, there's not like football clubs coming up to support the Columbus Clippers to like beat the hell out of other fans. It's like, you go have a good time, you pay a quarter of the price. It's a great time. So actually, it makes me want to get down to a Clippers game once it warms up again.
The minor league team that Tim Tebow ended up playing for was in the town I live in.
Oh my God.
So like Tim Tebow was literally playing baseball for like a Triple A team in Columbia, South Carolina. That was a startup team that year from the Mets minor league system. And I used to go to games because the company I worked for would go with like clients and everything. So we had like a suite. And I'm just like, this dude used to be the quarterback for the Denver Broncos. And now he's swinging a baseball bat in this random park in Columbia, South Carolina. And I'm watching it.
Yeah.
It was so funny. Like,
growing up, I mean, you know, so I was born in 86, and like my very, very early years, my brother was obsessed with the Bulls, as everybody was, during that era. And I can remember, like, again, I say remember very loosely because I was very young. But like, there's the weirdness of Jordan wanting to strap on some cleats and go out and play baseball and being like, you're telling me the most talented basketball player like ever that everybody bends over and like worships is putting cleats on to hit baseballs. Like that was the weirdest thing at the time. It's hilarious.
He needed something to fill his time because he got kicked out of the NBA for gambling. So, I mean, it makes sense.
Well, in hindsight, but you know, like the 4-year-old me is not sitting there going like, oh yeah, this makes totally theoretical sense. I'm just like, what the hell the fuck's this guy doing trying to hit baseball? Like, but, oh, lordy.
And there's no social media for the story to leak out. Like, it was just the papers, you know, like.
Man, I miss those days.
All speculations.
Dude, same here.
As much as, as much time as I spend on social media to run, like, a business and create a brand, I always tell people I would have been so much better back in the word of mouth days, man. I would have owned Hilliard, Ohio back then. Now, like, oh Lord, with social media, it's like you know everything about everybody all the time. It's like, oh my gosh.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. The last time I saw you, you were grinning from ear to ear, saying that you're the best in the world at what you do. And that prologue was pretty long of things that you do. So I'd love to hear how you form that belief that you're the best.
I would say one of. I say the best. Now, when I want to describe the best at what I do in this moment, I would say that's the mixture of the high-end, you know, technical teaching ability when it comes to defensive tactics meshed with the ability to genuinely communicate, connect with people, understand the emotion. I think that's the big thing in the world. You know, if somebody listening in is like, oh, the best in the world at defensive tactics, like I've got so much to learn from some of the guys that have been around yeah. so much longer than me and all that. And on both sides of that coin, that's the interesting part is like the language game. If you look at the language game, I'm very young in the grand scheme of things in the language game. And yet, you know, I've dedicated so much time to it in the last 4-ish years that it's completely, you know, metamorphosized my life, the way I coach and everything that goes into it. And then you look on the defensive tactics side of things, and I'm in my 15th year of coaching, and I know a ton, and I still have so much to learn on that. The spot where I don't know if I want to say it's negation knowledge is not by accident, yet I wasn't aiming at it, if that makes sense. Like I was making decisions to move along these paths that mattered to me. And yet where I found myself where, you know, I feel like I've really made the biggest strides and I could say like, I genuinely feel I'm one of the best right now at it is the ability to mesh both of those worlds. People that have been in the self-defense industry for a long time, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of alpha dog syndrome. There's a lot of, there's a lot of bravado that needs to be put up there. There's a lot of ego that gets challenged a lot. And, you know, that can be relatively complicated. And, you know, trust me, that was the first. I still deal with it. The first 10 years of me coaching, man, I was a young fire breather, like ego. I'm the best, you know, fucking thing that ever happened to anybody that's ever come in front of me. And it like even regulating my own emotions and my own way that I communicate with people. Last 4 years has been intense. So when it comes to like the areas where I teach, like where I really focus, like the knife control concepts program that we've put together, like that right now, honestly, I know we've hit something in a way that angle hasn't been touched yet. And we're seeing it in the students. And that's the biggest thing is like, I can say it's the best program in the world all day. However, at the end of the day, the purpose of the program is to get people to get better at this thing. And the students, the ones that we're getting in front of, are the ones that are actually making the huge headway. And so that's really important. The biggest thing to that terminology, the discussion that we were having, and none of which was mentioned in the you know prologue to this entire thing, is the ability to communicate, connect, and meet people where they're at without, you know, stepping onto a higher pedestal. You know, so being vulnerable, being open, communicating properly, while in the same exact breath of vulnerability, understanding that, you know, I do know a shit ton and I am technically an expert in all of these areas. You know what I mean? That right there, man, that's rare. I had never been shown any of that. Working with some of the best instructors in the world, I had never been shown explicitly the communication and connection and vulnerability piece. And I feel like in the last 3 years, especially, that's been the piece that has gotten more people to go like, holy fuck, man, like, you know, you really impacted me with that training, or man, I took your training and, you know, all the fighting stuff was awesome and it was on point, but man, you said this one thing about like breath work. Or I had a kid, we worked with the Florida Department of Corrections, and one of the younger training officers for the corrections area, I forget what region he was from, but he grabbed me afterwards and was like, hey man, last night, this was the day before we had gone out, had some dinner, and had a couple of drinks. He goes, yeah, last night you were, you said something about how, like, stuff that happened to us between, like, 0 to 7 years old, you know, could create triggers and all this type of stuff. And I had just mentioned in passing, like, somebody had asked me, like, what would be the perfect, if you could choose how to train everybody, what would that look like? And I was like, oh, shit, man. Like, if you came to me and you were like, I'll do anything you tell me to do, it'll be like, all right, here's your physical training, here's your breathwork stuff, and we're going to sit down and hash out everything that happened to you from 0 to 7, and, like, you know, you're going to ball your eyes out. It's going to be great. And it was like, that was the thing over 5 days of training that, like, before he left was like, I need to know more about that. Like, what is that? Why is that a thing? And I was explaining to him patterns and triggers. That's been, you know, to me, the biggest feedback I've gotten in a lot of stuff is like, yeah, man, the fighting's awesome. And you're saying things I've never heard anybody say before. Or, man, even the way you, like, you'll stop a sentence and you can literally see that in front of a group of people, you're pausing because you're thinking about your words to make sure that the words you're using are the words you want to be using. I've never seen anybody do that before. So stuff like that is very encouraging. But long story short, do I think I'm the absolute best? No. Do I think I'm one of the best in self-defense right now? I've worked my ass off to be, and I feel very confident in what I can do. In my experience, am I one of very few that have been able to connect with people on a really deep level? Yeah. And that I landed there randomly. Not randomly. That's a lie. I landed there without aiming for it, which to me, I think is very special. I was going to say pretty special, and I reversed my soft talk into very fucking solid talk.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about this, everything really you just said, is growing up, there's utility in fitting in. And we're told, you know, we benchmark ourselves against our peers at school and what things we do. But as we get older, that becomes impossibly difficult because our paths are just too different. You know, that's why it's hard to make friends after age 30 or age 40. Like, I may know somebody, you know, 10 years now that feels like an acquaintance. Like, I'd known Fredrick since we were, like, both kids. I really know him.
Yeah.
But somebody who I met when I was 30, when I'm 40, I feel like at times maybe I don't actually even really know that person deeply because it's impossible. And so the path that you're on, you ended up in on an Aaron-only path in a world where there was other people doing – you know, their own thing, right? That's your unique path. Like, nobody does what you do. It's incomparable. Nobody has that combination.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it, not to this level. And, you know, huge shout out to everybody I've coached with or coached under to this point, everybody I've trained under to this point, because what's really fascinating, Kyle, and I imagine most people can relate to this if they get introspective on it or retrospective. I learned a shit ton from people that they weren't explicitly trying to teach me. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So, like,
yeah, I can look back at some of my mentors coming up and being like, man, yeah, that guy understood language and communication, but he didn't know he understood language and communication. It didn't know he was teaching me that. You know what I mean? It was, you know, early on, one of the guys that took me under his wing very early was a guy by the name of Mark Slane, and he introduced me to Krav Maga. Like, I walked up to his gym, took an intro class, never left. So that's what set me on this entire path. And I look back on lessons that, like, people will ask me, like, hey, man, like, you do this thing, like, where'd that come from? And I'll be like, oh, man, I don't know. I never really thought about that. And I'll take a second. I'll be like, oh, shit. Like, well, man, Mark used to say A, B, C, and D. But it was – when he would do it, I don't think he realized he was embedding this principle or this underlying concept. It was just, these were the things that worked for me. This is how you get it done. You know, do it. You know, it was like that mentality as opposed to the deeper part. And in that regard, it's really fun and fascinating to look at, you know, some of the people that have impacted me the most over the years and to watch how they work and through my lens to be able to identify, like, oh, wow, that's him going out of his way to do personal connection. That's him, getting some, you know, building trust through showing vulnerability. He chose those words very specifically to get a point across versus another set of words. And I can pick those things up through the lens where almost everything I view now is like, you know, soft talk, negations, projections, you know, where's your mindset? How's your breath work? You know, trying to meet people where they're at and empathize, like, what was your story? What's your background? You know, what is the combination of experiences that got you here? And they, if they knew they were doing it, they never explicitly said it. Yet when I go back and retrace some of the lessons I learned from some people, and still currently, you can see it. And that to me was fascinating, because people, I feel there were a lot of things I was really, really, really good at, but I didn't realize they were strengths, or I didn't understand why they were strengths for a long time until I started understanding language a little bit more and understanding mindset a little bit more and connection and stuff like that. So that's always fascinating too, as it makes me want to go back and grab Mark. I haven't talked to Mark in quite a while, but it makes me want to go back and grab him and be like, hey man, like, you said this thing that has stuck with me. I mean, literally steered my path in some form or fashion, you know, for the last 14 years. Like, what was that? Like, where, what was your intention in saying that? And when you said it, that's always fascinated me too, because I feel like when I coach, I want to make sure that, you know, the things I'm saying are as clearly communicated as possible. Like, I just made a post about Marshall Rosenberg, and it's that clarity.
He's the best.
Yeah, you know, and it's just that clarity in communication. Like, this is exactly what I want you to know. I'm saying this for a reason. I'm not saying this because I want to be cryptic in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, I don't know. I went a little bit off the rocker on that, but when you say, like, collection of experiences going back, you know, to create a unique path, we're all on that in some form or fashion. Everything that's happened to us in the past, you know, I'm coming up on 36 years, you know, I have a birthday in April, and I can trace back things I do in coaching that come back to my mom, things that go in coaching that come back to my past with my dad, things that come up in coaching that come from previous mentors. There's stuff I do in coaching I learned from, like, my very first job as a front man on landscape. And so you're taking, I have a background in, like, video games, fighting. I did landscape architecture at Ohio State. I've got, like, this language thing. Like, it's this amalgamation of random things that, you know, created what I am today.
Video games.
I mean, I'm talking, like, as a kid. Like,
yeah.
You know, okay. You go all the way back. I mean, holy shit, dude. Come on. I remember when N64 came out. Like, that shit was fire.
Dude, we're all, yeah, absolutely. We're all influenced by that. Millennials, anyway, millennial males. I mean, that was like 80% of my relationship with Fedra from age like 10 yeah, to 15.
I got an N64 with Pokemon Stadium all in one bundle after getting some shots at the doctor. Like, that was my gift that I'll never forget. And I remember the moment where I learned that an N64 existed. Like, I went to a buddy's house when I was in like fourth grade or fifth grade, really young. And he had gotten an N64 with Pokemon Stadium. And I walked into his place and he turned it on. And I was like, what the fuck is this thing? I had not seen commercials. That was the first time. It was like magic, because Pokemon Stadium 2 was the first time that you saw Pokemon in 3D. Like, that was like, holy shit, these things are real. And I lived through like the Pokemon card craze and everything. So that was like a wild time. One thing that I want to point out that's really important, that I feel like you're not discounting, but you're kind of discounting about yourself, is that your ability to observe others and learn from them takes attention and it takes energy. And it also takes a lack of ego, because you have to walk into a room and say, first and foremost, I'm going to be able to learn something from this person. And it's on me to identify that and take that away and then figure out how to implement it in my own life. And that's something that I'm willing to bet serves you really greatly in your ability to connect with people as rapidly as you do. Because when you are as skilled at something as you are, and you combine that with a lack of ego, that conveys to whoever you're speaking to that, hey, you can get here too. Like, it's an ego projects into the world, like, I'm, you know, like you said, like, I'm the only one that can do this. No one can achieve what I've achieved. But when you eliminate that ego and you meet the people that you're talking to at their level, that helps to guide them while also reassuring them that, like, hey, when shit hits the fan, like, this person can step in and has all the skills and the ability to use his expertise in a way that will serve me or help me as much as I can. I've experienced this a lot in my career, like mentoring folks that I work with, and especially younger people, where, you know, you project this confidence that you're able to do the things that they want to do or be the person that they want to aspire to. You give them the space to explore on their own, but when they need it, you step in and you help them. And eliminating that ego is, I think, one of the most fundamental pieces to everything that you're saying that you've accomplished or that you're able to do. What do you think about that? Am I close? Like, did I miss the nail completely? Like, where am I at here?
No, that's, I completely agree. Ego is an interesting character for me, in my opinion, right? Like, and again, that's one thing I attempt to reiterate as much as I can. Like, it's all opinions and experiences. That's all any of us can really, claim to. So in my experience, what's interesting about ego, and I'll speak to myself primarily, is so earlier you mentioned, like, you started following the Browns because you joined a group of friends and you were worried that if you didn't follow football, they'd kick you out, right? So I tell people all the time, a lot of people that'll meet me, I love people. I love teaching, man, like, to a very high emotional level. I genuinely love teaching, not just like, ooh, I like it a lot. Like, I love it. Like, it gets me going. So I really enjoy connecting with people. So when people meet me for the first time, like, I'm very, charismatic. Hi, how are you? My name's Aaron. I'm super excited to work with you. And it's 100% genuine. And I talk to people and they go like, man, like, you're so confident in front of a group. Like, that must've been a trait you've had your whole life. And the reality was, it was exactly what you were talking about back in the day. I tell people all the time, I was such a beta with all of my friend groups. I always felt, bottom of the barrel. Like, I'm just, I would almost overly agreeable in any way, shape, or form, out of fear of, I imagine, what would be like fear of losing friends and being alone. And I'm sure that traces back to, broken family, dad drank too much, separated, like, the whole, whatever that is. So coming up as an instructor was actually the majority of my experiences when I stood in front of people, all the way up until I said the very first words, I was like terrified. Like, you talk about, like, people will talk about imposter syndrome. I still, to this day, battle with that in the regard that, like, up until I open my mouth, and then once I'm in the zone, I can get in the zone and I can remember my purpose for being there. And, in recent years, getting more accustomed to understanding and realizing that I know a ton and I also don't know a ton, and I'm okay being in that spot where I know that I'm very talented, I can help a lot of people, and I also know that I still technically don't know shit in the grand scheme of things. Like, if the rest of the world, when it comes to defensive tactics, knows, 0.1%, I might know 10, and that's pretty fucking good compared to that. But I also realize that I still have 90% that I haven't even touched on. So as I've navigated the imposter syndrome, the earlier, younger version of me navigated that by overcompensating with ego. And so that's where I say, like, ego is fascinating, because I would get in front of people and I would use my athletic ability. I would use my speed. I would use my youth. I would use my overall charisma to get people convinced and get them moving and make them buy into what I was. And it was necessary as part of my journey. So I look back at it, I still helped a lot of people doing that. However, I look back at that and go like, yeah, I made up for it. I wanted, like, the first thing, we even used to teach people to do this. The first thing right out of the gate is your demo needs to be fast and explosive. So it just awes them right out of the gate, right? So it's like, I might suck at words and teaching, but look how awesome I am. So, respect me. I relied on that. If somebody would had a question like, hey man, I'm having trouble with this, 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 or this, my answer would be more to show them how I did it versus trying to figure out how to get them to do it. And early on, it was a big swing. I'd like be nervous all the way up until a class started. And then when the class would start, it was like Aaron took off, but I overcorrected. And then little by little through these experiences, I mean, from people telling me like, God, man, you're such like, you're kind of an egotistical asshole. And me being like, holy fuck. Like, again, yeah. I go back to Mark and fights that I got in with Mark, I can look back on now and go, yeah, he was onto something and I was too emotional to hear it. And he was the first person that told me, you know, I forget exactly what the words were. So this isn't verbatim, but it was some point in time we were in a conversation and I was complaining about something that happened to do a class. And he goes, you know, sometimes you just steamroll people and you get real fucking egotistical. And I remember being like dabbed like in the chest and being like, what the fuck? But I was too young. I was too young at the time to navigate that. Well, fast forward. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead. Yes.
Did you ever get tired? Right. Cause I think these are like survival mechanisms that when you just blow it out, right? Like you lean on that so much, then you just, you wake up one day and you're exhausted. You don't even know why.
I used to tell people all the time that teaching 8 hours always felt 5 times harder than working out for 8 hours. And I've done plenty of 8 hour days. And there's an element to that where you need to be, you know, you're from a central nervous system standpoint, emotionally, you're on, you're constantly on, you have to navigate and absorb everybody else's, you don't have to, you choose to navigate and absorb everybody else's energies. And that's exhausting. To answer your question, I don't know that tired was the way that it arose in me. I was a lot more, my emotions swang a lot more back in the day, like real heavy. So like if you were to picture like a, you know, like even call like a metronome or something like that, like back in the day, I'd be all over the place, right? Bouncing back from parasympathetic to sympathetic, you know, like, but like, like real hard and heavy. And I hid my emotions really well from the people I imagined couldn't handle it. But I, you know, I was like all over, you know, whereas you fast forward, you start navigating some things, you come at peace with some things, you address and face some stories in your past. And now it's like, you know, I'm in the middle ground. I'm a lot more moderate. I'm aware of when I can see things building before they come in most cases. Obviously, we all have our swings. But so I would say that I would counter it with like fits of, you know, woe is me. Everything's fucking terrible. You know, fuck everybody. And all the way to the other side, which was like absolute sheer bliss. Isn't this incredible? And that was honestly, man, so it wasn't necessarily an expulsion, like my body would shut down, but I was a lot more erratic. And again, like we're talking early on, man, when I started all of this, you know, I was 21 when I started teaching full time. So fuck me when it comes to regulating emotions as a 21-year-old adult. Male at the time when I first started coaching was single. I very quickly met my now wife and started dating with her. But like, you know, you take my whole backstory, 21 years old, I didn't know how to manage any of that. I was put in charge of a gym. I was teaching. I was literally having people challenge me. I remember the one of the first Krav Maga intros I ever taught at the facility we opened. And literally like the dude that I was teaching was like, oh, you're the one running the class? And I was like, fuck me, man. Like, it was just like, but you look back on it, at the time I was like 160 pounds. I didn't have this dominating beard. You know, I was like, I was a rail. I was 21 years old. Like, I would do the same thing. I mean, I wouldn't now, but, you know, I would probably, if I was that guy, I would do the same thing. Like, oh, man, I signed up to learn Krav Maga and I got this, you know, puny little 21-year-old kid. So if you take that and you track it back to what you're originally asking, it's imposter syndrome was really hard for me early on. It's something I still work with. And that to me, honestly, like was a gift along this entire way because it helped keep me in check.
Yep.
You know, to go back to what you were saying, Fedja, which was like, I have always, every room I have ever walked into, I have assumed somebody in that room was better than me. And now whether that was accurate or inaccurate, and whether that was my imposter syndrome coming up to me, I've walked every room I have walked into. I have assumed somebody was significantly better than me. I told Mike Bledsoe on a podcast years ago that even at 30, I think at the time I was like 31 or 32, I said, man, even in my 30s, I imagine myself as like a 16 or an 18 year old kid. Like that's how I imagine people see me. And like that was that just that constant battle of this imposter syndrome. And over the last like 3 to 4 years, I've really melded into this place, which is, you know, as I mentioned, understanding that, man, I know a ton. I'm a really good instructor. I'm really good at connecting with people. I'm really good at picking things up. And I'm also keenly aware that I have so much to learn. So I'm very much looking for any nugget that anybody can give me. And I've been blessed to learn from students, mentors, and coaches alike. And so then I've reinforced that ideology. You know, I learned the last certification down in Florida. We were down there for 5 days and I learned so much from them. Like every one of the 19 people that were in attendance for that. And I, you know, Mike and I were the ones running the program and we learned a ton too. So, okay. That's my long winded answer to your thought, but it's something that's hit me like real hard over the years. Like I can't, I'm going to say this with like five negations. I can't understand how anybody walks into a room and they're just like, yeah, I'm the fucking shit. And like, no one's better. Like I've never been able to understand that in any way, shape, or form because I've just never felt that way. So yeah.
Well, in the business of combat, you've gotten your ass kicked enough times to know. Like if you that's what it is.
I mean, in training, I want to point that out. Real life. Yeah.
But yeah. Only when you allowed the teacher to do it. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, thankfully. So.
You know, I think there's a lesson for success in your story in that you started to see progress and real connection with people directly in proportion to your ability to manage that nervous system and bury that narrative of woe is me. You know, you mentioned going into that, you know, fully, right? That's the victim mentality. And that doesn't resonate with people. Mm. If you want to step into the leadership and the life of esteem that you have, right? In what you do.
I would say this. I would counter that comment. Like that doesn't resonate with people. It depends on what kind of people you're trying to surround yourself with. You're going to resonate.
That is absolutely true. Yes.
Yeah, you're going to resonate with people that don't want to stick their own neck out. They want to be told what to do. They want to be bossed around. Just like if you play the opposite end of that and you play like the super imposter syndrome, like I don't know anything, you're going to end up surrounding yourself with people that boss you around and take advantage, right? But that's the sweet spot. And, you know, again, Kyle, you and I have had many conversations. I know that you know this. So this is more for anybody else listening in, but it's you're choosing to actually genuinely connect with people. When you approach it, you know, more genuine and then find people that actually match the alignment of what you're trying to get done without the bravado, without the games, without putting the face on. It's like, look, this is what I got to offer. You know, I'd love to meet you where you're at and you can either take it or leave it. And I'm good either way. And that's such a man, I'll tell you what, that's a cool place to be with knowing the relationships you want to build and the reputation you want to create and the mission you want to accomplish. And then being in that spot and just being like, this is what I got, you know, take it or leave it. And I'm okay if you leave it, man. That was, oof. You want to talk about scarcity issues back in the day. Fuck, man. But anyway, yeah.
I applaud your awareness, my friend. I do. The awareness of the constant narrative. Fedger was asking me about that before we got on. He was like, man, how do you pay attention to all the different like narratives going on in your brain at the same time? I'm like, it's fun for me, man.
Practice.
It's I enjoy it.
Yeah, it is. It is, man.
You know, the first things in your bio that you sent to me were husband and father. And that's something I know Fedger wanted to ask you about. I've heard you tell stories about dealing with your son coming back from events and training, and he's really expressing himself, and you're opening the door for him to express himself. And yeah, so I'd love for you to you know, really riff on fatherhood and the impact that some of the things that we've spoken about have had on your ability to be a father.
Yeah, so let me give some more context here. So I found out recently that I'm going to be a dad.
Hey, congrats!
Yeah, big deal. And I am now enthralled with the idea of, like, how do I be a really good dad, you know, because I want to not only be there for my children, but also mold them into individuals that, you know, think for themselves and can create their own success and can excel in life in a way that exceeds the success that I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm growing really curious about how others have approached this mindset, because, and fatherhood in general, because to me, I have my pain point with fatherhood in general is that everyone I know has accepted that dads should just wing it. And every resource that I've tried to find of, like, someone just saying, like, hey, just even as simple as, here's what fatherhood means, here are, like, archetypes, here are, like, ways of thinking about it, no one gives a fuck. Like, everyone's just like, oh yeah, I'll be the dad that just, you know, figures it out as I go. You know, I'll watch football with the kid and it'll be fine. And I think that is such a shame, because there's so much honor in that role, and you're molding a human, and you're like this rock. You're supposed to be this rock or this representation of the world for this human. And if you don't take that seriously, you're going to disappoint. And if you disappoint, like, you're not only setting your child up for a poor experience later on in life, but you're also robbing yourself of really beautiful moments later in your own life when your kid is an adult and they have their own kids and all this stuff. Like, to me, it's such a crime that is not taken more seriously by men in general, and also by everything that influences men around them, and that it's not something that's talked about more.
Yeah. God, it's such a fascinating conversation to talk about with parenting in general. It's one of the areas I tell people all the time, like, look, I will gladly share my experiences. However, I refrain from ever telling anybody, like,
yeah, you have to do
this or whatever, because everybody's experience is going to be different. You know, I mean, I've had friends that I have friends and acquaintances that, you know, their kids have their own things going on, whether it's emotional things or whether it's physical things. Like, everybody's journey is going to be different. I will say I firmly agree with where you're at, where the vastly accepted thing is that, like, you know, anything good that the dad does is, like, blown way out of, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Oh my God, look how awesome that person is. They, you know, bought the kid a meal, and it's like,
oh, they paid attention to the kid for more than an hour.
Literally, that's the fucking job. I will say this, and I point this out too, because there's a lot of things, you know, to make correlations back to the industry for self-defense. Like, there's a lot of shit that I riff on, but I also want to point out that I feel like in the last 5 years, there's been a good trend moving certain ways. Like, I feel like, and this could also be, and I fully put this out there, that as I am changing, I'm surrounding myself with the resources that then surround myself with those resources. However, from what I've seen, there's shifts in that. You know, there's a lot more ownership around, you know, what's happening and what's going on as a father. Whatever that is, I am in control of me. And that's it. Like, I can't even say I'm in control of my household. I'm in control of what I do. My wife's in control of what she does. And you know, we can manage together. So to talk parenting, I mean, honestly, man, like, when my son was born, he was born February 16th, 2016. And 2016 was the biggest rise in like active shooter awareness, like training. So I was booked, I mean, through the year, supposed to travel everywhere for this. That was where I taught like 80 some seminars from the beginning of 2016 to the end of 2016. I was traveling all over the place, and fatherhood really hit me, like really hit me and really made me realize like, oh fuck, like the things I was planning for my life, I don't really like all of a sudden don't really care as much anymore. And I was honestly, I was supposed to board a flight for Denver. I was teaching a 2-day training at a friend of mine's in Denver. And I was sitting on our rocker with Maverick. And I just remember looking at my wife and I'm like, not like bawling, but like tears-ish in my eyes. And I'm going like, I don't want to go. I have no desire. I've never, never not wanted to go coach. Never not wanted to go coach. I said, I don't want to leave. I have no desire to leave right now. I want to stay here. I want to be with, you know, you and Matt. And that was really fascinating because that flight was good for me. I really noodled on that. I think that was the first time I ever realized like, oh, wow, you know, I've entered a completely different phase in my life. And when you go through these evolutions in life and these different phases, like it's okay to change where you thought you were going to go. It's okay to change your methodology around stuff. So that was big for me because that was the first thing that really put it into perspective to give me something to lean up against to go, okay, when I have an opportunity in front of me or I have a decision to make in front of me, like what are my core principles around whether I say yes or I say no on certain things? And that started to make me realize the time, how important time was. I think at that point I was very loose about my time. And that made me realize how important time was, like time as in like, time, our fucking time on the earth, like we only have X amount of it. So that was big for me. So that was a very big turnaround. And when it comes overall, like I imagine most people have had that moment. You know, if you give any shit about your kid, you know, you've had that moment, like, you know, you're holding them, like especially this tiny little thing, and you're going like, fuck, like I want to keep it safe. I want to make sure it grows up and it's capable. I want to make sure it's, you know, technically a good part of society. Like I want this person to turn into a functioning human being. And that's like a huge responsibility. The what I imagine, and this is fully my imagination and my thought here, my opinion, is that the difference between going, feeling that weight and going, okay, I'm gonna step into this. I'm gonna step up to this, and I'm gonna figure it out, and it's gonna be a challenge. Versus feeling that weight and then going, well, society doesn't necessarily expect me to do too much. You know what I mean? It's like shying away from it and hiding from it, or sitting in that moment and going like, all right, like I need to order some books. I need to go into some things. Like, you know, what does my time mean? Like, fuck, I got to get home. I got to rearrange my schedule. How do I rearrange my schedule so that I'm home more? Like, do you, when you feel those moments, those impacts, do you actually take action and make change? Or do you feel it and then go like, man, I wish I could do that, but it's too hard. You know, it's that kind of thing. And to me, that was a big learning phase early on because, and still to this day, man, I mean, I'm hugely protective of specific time slots, and to a point that almost shocks people because I've got no problem turning down, like for instance, so that we have the Arnold Sports Festival coming up. I've ran that now coming up on 9 years. This will be our 9th year. And this is my last year. I have so many things I want to do, and that takes such a huge amount of time and focus and emotion to focus on. And I want to take that time and focus and emotion and put it, you know, where I want to be with the kids and with the family. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to be present for them. So like, are you willing to step up to those big questions and those big challenges and go like, all right, like I know where I want to go. It's just, am I willing to actually do the things I need to do to get there? To me, that's huge. And all, you know, if somebody told me like, hey man, you get a choice, you can either, you know, be super present and raise your kids, or you can coach, but you can't do both. You know, you're talking about like, you know, put my wife in the family category as well. You're talking about the two most important things to me. I love coaching and connecting with people, and I love my family. I could walk away from coaching and not even fucking bat an eye. And that's after, I want to say this, that's after a lot of thought. I mean, I have noodled on this head to toe. To me, that's, I don't know that I've ever had to verbalize this in any way. That's the big thing. Like when you feel those heavy moments, or when you feel those expectations or those desires, it's just like anything else, like any other goal you set, like, okay, you know what you want to get done. Are you willing to do the shit to do it? Like, are you willing to change, to be the person that you want to be, to experience with your kids, to be the highlight you want for them? And that's, man, it's a challenge for sure. I'm very blessed. My wife is incredible. She put up with a ton of my shit and piss poor communication skills. And, we talk through a lot of stuff. She challenged me on the way that I would approach raising, because the way we were brought up was completely different. And then I was able to challenge her, and we were at a really good, constructive, debated conversations back and forth to find a common middle ground about, like, okay, this is how we want to approach things. And that's important too, because if you get in your own way, in my opinion, if you take care of yourself, and then as a family, as a husband and a wife, or, you know, whatever the collective, spouse and spouse, right? If you take care of each other, then you have the potential to really take care of the kid. In my opinion, it's so easy, especially, you know, from what I've seen, and this is motherly, like, they actually give birth to the kid. There's definitely a different connection there. Mm-hmm. Don't try to flex on your wife in any way, shape, or form. She's doing like, she's putting the work in. She's got the connection. So, like, there's that. But, you know, it can be so easy to go, well, I need to do everything for the kid, everything for the kid, everything for the kid. And what people often miss the mark on is when you do that and you stop doing for yourself, and you proverbially drain your own cup, that's when you snap. Like, that's when you're yelling at the kid. That's when you're shoving the iPad in front of them. That's when you're feeding them whatever the fuck you want to feed them, but just to get them to shut up. It's not, you know, it's not because you're selfish and took care of yourself. It's the opposite. You got to find that balance. Like, my wife is very good about, like I know when I need to go take some time and be able to get things done. And I'll, like, I know when she needs to take some time, like, just get the fuck out of the house. I don't care where you go. You know, like, there's at least $500 in the bank account. Do whatever the hell you want with it. Don't come back. If you want to stay at a hotel, go to a hotel. Whatever you need to do to get your mental space back, you know, to feel like you've got something going on to work for you. That stuff, I think, is, in my opinion, in my experience, has been the most impactful, is that we've really made sure that we take care of ourselves, both from an example standpoint and to set ourselves up to be able to then follow through with all the things we want to do. I mean, we've all been at the end of a long fucking day and you're tired and everybody's pissing you off, or you didn't get sleep for a couple of days and the whole world sucks, you know what I mean, in your view at that moment in time. The last thing you want is to create memories where you think your kids suck. And the reason you think that is because you're tired and you've stretched yourself too thin and you've made the decisions to get out of that. And that's a shit spot to be. And I'll tell you right now, this might sound relatively controversial, but they will fucking challenge you in ways that, so theoretically, I say theoretically, from what I understand, my dad smacked us around a lot. I was real young during that phase. So I take my own memories with a grain of salt. From what I understand, my dad smacked us around a little bit when I was a kid. You know, it didn't like beat us, at least that I know of, but like smacked us around a little bit. And I have literally sat and been like, fuck, man, like, I get it. Like, I would never do it. Like, I would never do it. Seriously, like, I would never do it because I've taken the time to sort my shit out. And that was a long road. But I took the time to sort my shit out so that when I'm up here, the highest I'm getting is like a high tone yelling and being like, Kim, I need to fucking leave. You know what I mean? Like that, like that's where we're getting to. But I've actually had that thought, and it's fascinating. You go, I mean, like, Kyle, you've gone through Strong Coach. So like, you think about that idea.
It's been a while.
But I mean, even just think about that terminology, right? Like, your parents did the best they could with what they had. And I've had that thought about my dad. Like, no matter what the background was, that's like, right, he didn't have the tools to manage that, whatever that is. And again, is that on him? Yeah, he's got a responsibility in it. But it, like, man, I had that moment. It was like, fuck, like, that is the level that they can challenge you. And if you can focus on enough self-care and good communication between you and the other partner, then you have a shot of managing your stress levels. And then if you can manage your stress levels, kids learn by fucking example. 90% of what they're going to learn is based off of you. So when your kid throws a tantrum, it's because at some point in time you threw a motherfucking tantrum and they learned from it. So if you want them to not throw a bunch of fucking tantrums, when you get pissy, learn how to keep your shit together and navigate things and say certain words, and you can get outside of that, in my experience. So those are big lessons. And I will tell you right now, had I not built the relationship I built with Kim, and I say that lovingly in a manner that, like, hadn't Kim tolerated me for the first probably 4 years of our relationship.
Let me translate this for you.
Yeah, like, until I became, you know, more of a mature adult. And if I hadn't have found, you know, Strong Coach, and I hadn't have found and lifted and things like that, I mean, honestly, I don't know. I know that I wouldn't have hit him, but I feel like I would not have the skills I would have wanted to really represent what I want them to be, like, to manage stress and all that type of stuff.
Which I think what you're saying is, yes, you would develop the right restraints to, you know, treat your kid the way you want them, but perhaps without the right tools, you would have had resentment for that, because you would have been like,
well, resentment, or what's the coping mechanism, you know? Because whatever the coping mechanism is for me to fall in the boundaries of what I want to get done there, if that carries over onto them, like, how am I teaching them to manage stress? How am I teaching them to make decisions? How am I teaching them? And these are, listen, I'm like, I'm sure on this podcast, everybody's like, oh, wow, Aaron's got his shit together. These are day-to-day processes and struggles. And thank God for my wife. My wife is incredible. Kim is incredible when it comes to communication and research and reading on, you know, education for children and things like that. And then she goes, you know, hey, I really want you to read this. Let's talk about this back and forth. I mean, you know, again, she's such a, it's a partnership. It's a fucking team, for sure. However, it's like, I want them to be set up for success for anything. How do I build resiliency in them? You know, like, I grew up, you know, pretty broke, you know, split family. You know, we had enough challenges, and that to me was such a benefit. It was such a gift, because I never needed much. I could always get by with very little. I would always figure out a way to get things done. I had a sense of grit that was naturally built into me. And that was one of the biggest questions coming in. Like, they're going to have two loving parents, decent amount of money, you know, good outlets. They're going to be physically active. We're going to feed them well. And, like, that was one of my first struggles early on. I was like, how do I teach them adversity? You know, it's like one of those.
I'm going to have to drop my kid. Like, I ate Texans chicken nuggets. Dude.
Oh my gosh, dude, I ate so many Tyson chicken nuggets through college. Like, when I met Kim, I used to make her pierogies and Tyson chicken nuggets. That was
Dino nuggets. They're the best. I'm obsessed with that idea too. It's like, how do you build in? Because I'm in a similar position to you. Like, my kids will grow up in a lot of comfort. And I actually laugh because, so my wife and I are we're over the next couple of years, we're going to be preparing, like, both emotionally and mentally and financially to buy a house, right? And we're like, I grew up in a one bedroom apartment. Like, my family came to America from Croatia when Yugoslavia broke up. There was a war there, and we were refugees here. And so we didn't have a lot, similar to you. I mean, we were, like, lower middle class. We never struggled or anything like that. But, like, my dad was working a lot. My mom raised us at home. Like, my brother and I grew up in a single bedroom apartment. So, like, to me, because of the way I grew up, having a four bedroom home is like the sign of ultra wealth. But in America, like, you look around and I look at, like, where I'm at career wise and where my wife is at career wise, I'm like, oh, we can afford a 4-bedroom house. And now I'm obsessed with what the heating bill is going to be. Cause I'm like, no, we can't afford this. There's no way. Because think about the maintenance costs. Like, we're not going to be able to afford this. This is insane. And she and I will get into arguments because we're like, or not arguments, but like discussions about this where I'm like, listen, we need something smaller, like more reasonable. And she's looking at me like, dude, we both work from home. Where do you think things are going to fit? Like, you have to get over this. And I feel a lot of what you're saying where like my kid will grow up in a comfortable life with a comfortable lifestyle. Like if all things continue on the trajectory that they're going, like we'll have a good time of it. And how do you build resiliency when someone is in that kind of soft environment, you know, like for lack of a better term? And how do you help someone become an adult that can navigate hard situations if they're not always exposed to that? And there's an element of like being a kid where, you know, I remember this one kid, when I was younger, I like made fun of his dad in front of him and he beat me up, you know, and I like learned a lesson because I was outside and I got beat up. And, you know, there's an element of that too, that you want to expose your kids to, but you can't like force those situations. And everything you're saying resonates with me. I actually, this is the last thing I'll say as I ramble. Something I've done that I find really funny with my wife is like, if there's a behavior that she'll exhibit now, where like if she gets hangry, for example, she's really susceptible to getting hangry. And when she gets hangry, she like is short and frustrated and all this stuff. And I'll just look at her and be like, you're going to act that way when we have a child, pass that behavior on to them. And
where we ended the advice portion of the podcast a while ago. We're past that.
She looks
now.
At me. She's like, are you just going to do this with everything now? She's going to extrapolate everything like 5 years into the future when we're both parents and like every one of my behaviors is unacceptable. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Cause everything has, the stakes are so much higher now.
The stakes are so much higher.
Thank you for sharing that. I mean, that, like I said, I'm beginning this journey and it's fascinating to me. A lot of what you said requires awareness and ties back to what I mentioned earlier, the elimination of that ego, because you know, when you're able to eliminate that and acknowledge like, hey, there's a lot that I have to learn and there's a lot that I have to, face and challenge myself with to be better. That's a really big component of being able to perform in the way that you're saying that you wanted to perform, like your willingness to be humble and accept that you don't know what you don't know and learn the things that you think are important that enable you to be as effective as you are at whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, man. It's true. One thing I'll leave you with, cause I know we're getting ready to wrap up, but I, the building adversity thing, this helped me a lot. The building adversity in the kids is sit down and journal, like spend a little bit of time and like break out. What do you define as adversity and resilience? Mm. Like, what do you think the key traits are and what does it mean? Because that's changed for me. And that helped me as a dad. Or at least I feel it did, because the way that I used to picture resiliency was you had to constantly suffer and work your way out of it. And I think there should be some challenges. Definitely people need to experience challenges. However, defining what you want, what you imagine resilience and adversity is may just change the way you look at it. That was really big for me. So.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Agree with that, my friend. I do. And to go one last time back to something you talked about a lot, Aaron, which is language. A kid spends the first 5-6 years of its life doing nothing but trying to understand the meaning behind the words that are coming out of all the people they're around. And the first thing they feel, because it's intuitive, is the energy of it.
Yeah.
So there's something to that for sure. It's why I'm such a believer. And, you know, and what precedes the words is the thoughts. There's a book by Earl Nightingale, The Strangest Secret. And the strangest secret is that you are what you think about all day. That's it.
True.
that's the strangest secret. And so, yeah, we do pass this on to future generations.
Well, you pass on to future generations, and you also pass it on to anyone that you influence, which I imagine that is, in a lot of cases, can be more than people give credit to. That's one thing that was a slow burn for me coming out of Strong Coach and then heading into all the lifted training was just how much of what I was doing that people started picking up on in the gym, like in the community, right? So we have a training center here in Hilliard, Endeavor Defense Fitness, and people were picking up on how my language changed and the way I was coaching differently. So you influence anyone. I mean, I made a post, probably 6 or 7 months ago where I started changing anytime anybody would bring me something, like somebody brings me the check at a restaurant, right? And I'd always say, oh, hey, appreciate it. I changed it into you, and I started just telling everybody, like, oh, hey, man, I appreciate you. And then even just that, like, you know, you talk about the one word game, but that in like that simple change has like literally like it's amazing the look you get from them. Like the way they treat you, the overall just like connection between you and that person. And it's a very simple phrase. You know what I mean? It's
also the eye contact that goes along with it. Like rather than just like taking the check and putting it down in front of you. I notice I do this at Starbucks because I get coffee from them like every morning. And like when they'll tell me like, have a good day. And I'll literally look at them and be like, I hope you do as well. Like, and I'm like, seriously, is that not the least I can do? You know, negations acknowledge like that is literally the least I could do like in that situation. And it's amazing that it requires participation.
Yeah.
Active participation.
Yeah. It's fascinating, man. It really is. I think back to before one of the most impactful books I ever read before I found language was How to Win Friends and Influence People. Right. Which anybody worth their salt has probably at least flipped those pages once or twice, or at least listened to the audiobook. But he tells the story about, he was in line somewhere and was just talking about like making connection with people, like giving, giving a compliment around something that maybe they appreciated or a service they did, like making that connection. And he talks about the dude where he's like, look, I didn't know what else to say about anything that was going on, but it looked, you know, he commented on the kid's hair and he was like, oh, you know, your hair looks nice or something like that. And it was like, immediately, he's like, I knew the kid was proud in it. You know, it had product in it. So he obviously took a little bit of time to you know, do it. And, you know, I just commented, he said his eyes just lit up and he did that. And I remember reading that and being like, man, that's fucking cool. You know what I mean? Like to actually take a second and, you know, just do a heads up. You know, what's one thing, man, if I could just drop a fucking nugget on you, you're not even going to see me the rest of the day. I'm a total stranger. You don't know who I am. If I could drop a nugget on you that literally changes your mood, you know, for the better. Fuck, that's cool. Like, and I remember even really young, just being like, all right, that's cool. That's going to be a thing. And then now you start turning language and you're like, oh fuck. Yeah. That makes total sense. Like you actually understand the ins and outs of it. You're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So, but that was simple things. You influence your kids and you influence the people that are underneath you in every decision you make. I posted about Marshall Rosenberg today. I posted some quotes because I had a day. Let's just say that planning for the Arnold Sports Festival is it'll challenge all of your processes. Let's just say that. But I posted about Marshall Rosenberg today, and I'm going to slaughter the quote, but it's something around humans are the most dangerous when they don't realize the impact of themselves or something like that. And it was just like, their words, their actions, and whatever the hell it is. And just bringing the idea back to like, you're literally in charge of your bubble. Fucking focus on it. Be good.
Rosenberg, he broke therapy. He just, he figured it out, and that was the end of the game.
Well, yeah, you would think.
They've only tried to overcomplicate it since.
Yeah, I know. Except nobody, like, anytime I mention his name, everybody's like, who? And I'm like, oh, God, please. Please, I'm just going to buy boxes of MVC and just hand it out. Just read this book and start learning. Which is a hard sell when you're a self-defense instructor, when you're like, what's one of the best books I could read? Nonviolent Communication. Go buy the book, Nonviolent Communication. It'll change your life. And it's like, didn't you just teach me how to potentially bludgeon a man if he tried to kill me and my family? That is the violent part if the nonviolent communication did not work. But let's try the nonviolent communication first, right? So that's always a hard sell when I get asked for like book lists. And it's like the top three, the nonviolent communication, one of the best books you could ever read. They're like, they kind of like look at me puzzled, like, really? I'm like, just trust me. It is so good.
And in the interest of time, I'll say read it and think about the whole conversation in the context of kids, because they understand feelings inventory well.
Innately.
And so like, I can tell you're angry or like identifying that when they're wailing, it's like, what do you feel? Are you angry? Are you frustrated? Like, say what the thing is.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great book. That's
exactly. That's the reaction, right? I'm going to do the Mark England. Do you see that? Do you hear that breath? You see that breath right there? That's the one.
Aaron, you now officially have the record for the longest episode of Mentality Monsters. So
my wife
thank
would
you
not
so
be
much.
Surprised. I like to talk. And
yeah, this has been great. And before we wrap up, is there anything you want to promote to the audience, like social media, business, anything like that?
Yeah, totally. If you're ever in Central Ohio, pop in Endeavor Defense and Fitness. We do self-defense. We do jiu-jitsu. We do CrossFit. I'm traveling around the country right now. We have at least one training every month from now through July for our Knife Control Concepts program. Usually it's in the format of a two-day training, 5 hours each day. It's a very physical class. It's open to everybody. It doesn't matter your background. Learning how to control, move, transition with a blade in the hand. And then I got a couple of podcasts I've been on, including this one. I've got a book out that I published in 2017, How to Survive an Active Shooter, that you mentioned a little bit earlier. And you can follow me on the Instagram at Jannetty Aaron. I put up I feel like a good mixture of fighting, choking people, and then also, mindset and language work and stuff like that. So it's a pretty good mix, I'd say.
Cool. Got
the videos, the knife control videos are really cool to watch.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
I'll say that.
You're coming to a Browns game with me next time I'm in Cleveland.
Sure, I'll do it. I'll go. Now it depends on who's playing, whether I'm going to root for him or not. But
you're rooting for the Browns. It's fine.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I'll buy myself an $11 12-ounce beer and enjoy the process.
Thanks so much for your time, man. And yeah, this was an awesome conversation. So much appreciated.
Well, I appreciate Kyle, man. I appreciate you reaching out and having me on. I appreciate both of you for awesome questions and doing the good work. You know, we need a lot more podcasts on there on getting your head right. So I respect y'all for what you're doing. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. All right. Cut it.